Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Delta Flyers. I'm Garrett Wong, one of your hosts, and the other host is right next to me. Well, not really next to me. He's next to me in spirit.
In spirit, in reality, I'm always next to you in kind of a creepy way, Garrett. I'm sort of always creeping next to you.
Robbie, that are you saying if you die before I die that your spirit will follow me and just you'll be my companion
always,
for life?
Always.
Oh.
Yeah. Kind of like in Threshold. The lizards that
I didn't even
always,
get to say your name.
Always with us. Robert Duncan McNeil. Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Duncan McNeil, the man with three names. Am I the only one with three names in our cast? I think so.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us, for open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Does anyone call you Duncan? Anybody?
No. I did go by Duncan.
Really?
When I first
Who had said
to join,
that?
I had to join the union to do a soap opera back in the 80s. I joined AFTRA at the time, the soap opera union. Yeah. And there was already a Robert McNeil. And so they were like, well, you could use your middle name or, you know, I was like, well, maybe I'll go by Duncan McNeil. Sure, I'll try that. And I joined. And for about 3 months, all the credits on all my children, the soap opera, say Duncan McNeil.
His parents should not have named him that, basically.
No.
You should have been the only Robert McNeil.
I think so. I think so.
Hey, you have a story about one of our Patreon patrons,
I
Samantha.
Do. Here in our status report, our intro, I wanted to give a shout out. One of our Patreon members, Samantha, she's been sharing photos of her young son, Charlie, every week on our Facebook page, on the Delta Flyers Facebook page. And she's been saying how Charlie loves to watch the Delta Flyers podcast, watch the video, and he just sits there and he stares and watches us. And she thinks that he really feels like he knows you and me now. So first of all, I want to tell Samantha, please tell Charlie to start to call us Uncle Garrett and Uncle Robbie. I think that would be only appropriate at this point. Uncle Robbie and Uncle Garrett. And, you know, Charlie was born during this the COVID times. He doesn't get a lot of interaction with the outside world. And
right.
And so we just want to give a shout out to Charlie. Hey, Charlie. Hi, buddy. We're going to do another episode.
You are now famous with everyone who listens to the Delta Flyers.
Yes. Do you remember that video? Charlie bit me. Charlie. Do you remember that YouTube video that was like viral?
What is that from?
There was a YouTube video of a little boy and his like baby brother named Charlie. And the little baby bit his finger and he was like, Charlie bit me. Charlie. It was the cutest thing. So,
do you know why I'm laughing so hard?
Why?
Because you never do voices. And I love when you do a voice and you just did a voice and you do this little, it was a little British kid, right? It's
a little English kid.
Okay.
Yes. But our little Charlie, you know,
yes.
Uncle Garrett and Uncle Robbie's Charlie,
yes.
He's a dedicated Delta Flyers watcher. He doesn't bite anybody.
He doesn't.
No, he doesn't. A biter.
He just bites into each episode of Voyager. That's
exactly.
It.
He takes a big bite out
big
of
bite
Star
of Voyager.
Trek Voyager. All right. We got a big bite this week. This is Sacred Ground.
Oh, my
Very
gosh.
Special episode to me.
I'm so excited.
It was my first directing opportunity on Star Trek.
Yeah.
First time I ever directed a TV show.
Yeah.
So this was a big deal. I just want to go watch it and we'll come back and we'll talk about all of that. There'll be lots to share, I'm sure. You ready to watch it?
I am ready. I'm very excited. Okay. We'll be right.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
There we go.
All right, guys, we are back. Robbie and I are back from watching his very first directorial debut.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo! Sacred Ground.
Here's my haiku. For Sacred Ground, Janeway needs some faith. Her science is meaningless. So Kes will be saved. There you go. There's the haiku.
There you go. I like it. Yes, we have very similar tastes in our poetry. I'm going to be using many of the words that you used, even though yours is much shorter. So here we go. Here's my limerick. Shore leave ends with Kes knocked out. Janeway must save her, there is no doubt. A ritual long and arduous. Results are simply meaningless. In the end, only blind faith holds any clout.
Nice. Blind faith. I like it.
Blind faith. Yes, that's it.
Good.
Story by Geo Cameron, teleplay by Lisa Klink, directed by none other than RDM himself, and a nervous RDM, as we talked about earlier.
Yes, very nervous to start this episode. I have my binder from Sacred Ground. There's a lot of notes in here, a lot of plans and little sketches and storyboards and, you know, in some ways I overplanned a lot of things and in other ways I didn't plan on some things. But this binder's really interesting and I'm going to use it during this recap because I think there's some interesting stuff as we go through that I'll just pop in some notes I wrote. But
I do have a question. You said that there are some things that you overly prepared for. What would that be? Just out of the blue.
I think that, you know, just like this episode's theme, in many ways, about control and science and planning and predictability. Like, you know, there's a certain level of planning and predictability when you're directing television that you can kind of make your plan and think you know how it's going to go. But when you actually get out there, it doesn't turn out, the actors don't look exactly, you know, they may not stand exactly where you plan or what you thought. All of a sudden, you may learn something new when you're actually standing there in the set and it's lit and the actors are there. So sometimes I think my plans were very specific, like the actor will look this way and it will say this word. And, you know, it was very, I was like, no, just see what happens. And then I think in other ways, like one thing that I realized in watching it and thinking about this is I remember when it got to the stunts. Because often as an actor, when you're doing stunts, you sort of rely on everyone else to figure out how they're going to film it. Because obviously you can't do things that are dangerous in real life. You do a part of it maybe for one shot, and then the stunt double does this part of it for the other shot. And even things as simple as Janeway picking Kes up and walking up steps, carrying her, that's a stunt. It doesn't look like a stunt to the viewer. You just think, oh, Janeway picked Kes up and walked her up. But Kate Mulgrew, it's not safe for her to pick up another adult human being and try to carry them up steps when you can't see where you're walking and things. So she can't do that. So I think in some ways, as I looked at my plan, I was like, oh, I didn't calculate in all the variables of stunts like that, just walking up steps or carrying another adult human being or how Kes sort of falls back. Anyway, there's a, it was interesting to look at and remind myself that I hadn't directed stunts yet. I'd acted in them, but I hadn't thought of it from the directorial point of view. So I've definitely learned a lot since then. There was another quality that I noticed in watching the episode of very slow pace, that things were paced very slowly and methodically. And I think what probably that there was, that's a result of me directing as an actor for the first time. I wanted the actors to have the moments to feel things because that was where I was coming from, right? Yeah. I've learned since then that pace and moving, like say the words, move, keep things moving, keep the energy up, all that. But as an actor, it always feels good to feel the feelings and take your time. And I think I was sort of encouraging that, a lot of that with the actors. And so it's got, you know, if I were to do this again, I probably would have paced some of those scenes up a lot more than I did and push the pace and things like that. But
It didn't bother. I didn't think it was, I mean, when you just described that, you made it sound like molasses, and to me it wasn't molasses. I do see your standpoint of coming from it as a as an actor, in that you did showcase the actors and you definitely let them, you know, you let them shine. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there were definitely shots that when you had on Janeway that reminded me of shots that Rick Colby would do with Janeway, with Kate, and because he really wanted to showcase her, mainly because he was dating her at the time. So that was part of his plan, was to showcase her in the best light and let her be an actress first and foremost. And so you did the same thing here, but it definitely wasn't distracting to me in any way, shape or form. And I know that if you had to do this again, that you would, you pump it up a little bit pacing wise.
Yeah, I think I would.
Yeah. That makes sense. And that's because you've been doing it for so long now, you know what needs to be done to make the show the best show it can be. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's the show that it's the story and it's the show that matters, not each individual actor, right? I mean, they're just components of the overall process. Yeah. Okay, so let's start off. We start off with an invitation from the Nakani for a few days shore leave to learn about their culture. So this involves a tour of the sanctuary. The sanctuary that honors their ancestral spirits. On this tour, we find our main players of Torres, Kim, Neelix, and Cass are the four that are taking this tour. Of course, while we're taking the tour, guess who wanders off from the tour? Good old Cass and Neelix. And Neelix has wandered off before. Remember? They wandered off in Basics. Yes. Part one and two, didn't or Cass?
This is our classic cave set. So we had adapted this with some light fixtures and some... So we're in cave sets we were very familiar with, and we had shot a lot in. But I did notice it was very dark in there.
Yes.
Like it was really dark. And I remember, you know, we filmed on film back then. So it's not like nowadays where you have digital cameras that you can see on the monitor, the exposure levels and the light levels and things like that. So I was thinking, boy, it's really dark. Like sometimes it was hard to see faces, make things out. And that big open area with the biogenic field and the steps leading up to that shrine, that was all added to our cave set on one side.
Right.
So that was the new part of the set, but otherwise it was the regular cave set. And
I liked how dark it was.
Did you like it?
Whenever it's lit up more, then it just, to me, because I'm familiar with that stage, it's just me going, oh, it's the supplemental stage, sound stage again. Yeah. We're on 16 again, and there's those damn rocks again. I mean, so they tend to look the same, and I can tell it's the same damn set. But because it was darker, I wasn't sure if we were on 16. I thought, maybe we were at Bronson. Maybe we went somewhere else. I don't know. Yeah. So I think it worked for this episode.
Good.
Yeah.
I thought about Harry Groener as well. I was a big fan of Harry's. He was a big theater actor in New York when I was had been younger and in New York, and I had seen him in a number of shows on Broadway and was very familiar with Harry as a very talented theater actor. So I was just thrilled with this episode, the cast we got, starting with Harry Groener. Becky Baker, who comes in shortly as the guide.
She's great.
Love married her. To Dylan Baker, both of them phenomenal actors. Again, New York theater people that I knew, I had known, so thrilled to get them. Our spirit guides, the three people waiting in the train car or whatever you thought it was. The three people there, Parley Bear, who was a legendary Hollywood actor, having done so many movies, and I think he was in the Andy Griffith Show or something. I can't remember.
Is he the grumpy guy or the less grumpy?
He's the grumpy guy.
He's the grumpy.
That's Parley Bear. He had done a thousand things, been around forever. Keen Curtis played the balding, you know, kind of quieter, not
the good cop. He was the good cop.
He was the good cop.
Right.
Keen Curtis, another phenomenal New York theater actor. I'd seen him on Lacage on Broadway. I'd seen him do Shakespeare in the Park. Keen Curtis, just an amazing actor. Again, I was just so honored to be directing with such great actors. Estelle Harris, again, like super familiar. I think she went on to be on one of the sitcoms that became very well known.
Well, you lucked out to have such talent, and they lucked out to have, but they lucked out to have you because you knew of their career. You see what
I knew
saying?
All of their careers very well.
Exactly, and, because you're an actor first and foremost at that point.
At that point, I was thrilled. Yeah.
Okay. Now let's get on with the story. Kes and Neelix wander off. When Kes walks up to the entrance of that shrine and she gets shocked, my first reaction was, I said, that is the stunt double walking up to the shrine as well as the stunt double getting shocked. Am I right to have assumed that? It is both. Okay. Because I knew right off the bat,
That wasn't Jennifer's walk.
Because, well, also, it's not her walk and it's not her body shape either. Yeah. Like that woman had, she had more hips than Jennifer does, right? Yeah. Jennifer was 19 at the time. So, you know, not so much hip in the hip department, right?
Yeah.
And so I saw that. I was like, wait a minute. And I thought, is that truly, and this comes back to what you said about what most people, outsiders, don't realize is a stunt. Janeway picking up Kes is a stunt. But Kes walking up those stairs can also be a stunt in a way, right? Because it's precarious in a way. And also maybe because you were thinking, well, we're going to show her to get zapped from behind. We might as well use her to walk up just to establish that. Is that kind of the thinking that you did in terms of why you used the stunt double?
I think we did that as one take, you know, with her walking up and then taking the fall and rolling back.
And falling
back. The other thing to note about that, that energy field up at the top of the steps, there was no set beyond it. I remember Marvin Rush when we got into there and he was like, what are we going to do? We can't look at this big archway because there's nothing behind it. So that's why the light, he was like, how can we look at this set when there's, if you look beyond it, there's nothing there.
Nothing.
You just see, I think they had put like a black curtain or something, but he goes, there's just nothing there. So that's why it's filled with that bright, bright light and the smoke to sort of diffuse it, because there was no set behind the archway. There was nothing there. So
was that a big problem? Do you recall that being a big problem?
Well, I remember the solution. You know, we didn't have a solution initially. We were like, well, what are we going to do about that? And then the lighting and the smoke and all of that diffusion became the answer. Like when we look over there, we've got to have the stage filled with smoke and big, bright lights so that you just can't see beyond the arch.
I'm curious to see if you remember what was the first scene that was shot for this episode.
You know, I've got the shooting schedule right here in my binder,
I'm really curious, because you know, you talk about this issue with like looking beyond the gate and there's nothing there, and I'm wondering, was that the first scene?
Typically we would start filming on the ship on our standing sets and give them time to build the sets that
I see. Okay, so it would have been a bridge set, or it would have been in sick bay, or it would have been in Chakotay's quarter. Okay,
the very first scene, I'm looking at the shooting schedule. That's the shooting schedule, guys.
There it is.
Right there.
There it is, the shooting
schedule. And it says the very first scene that I ever directed as a professional director was in sick bay.
Yes.
With just the doctor. And that's it. It must have been a phone call or something.
Oh, yeah.
Janeway's life sign. So it must have been.
Okay.
It says scene 17 part and 18 part with just the doctor. And then the second scene was with Neelix, Kes, and the doctor. It was scene 37. Keep talking to her is how it's described.
Right. That scene that you filmed of the doctor, that's the doctor notifying Janeway while she's in the transporter room with myself and Tuvok. Mm. And the doctor comes on screen and says that he has, you know, put this subdermal implant in her, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I think that's the scene that you shot first.
Yeah,
then,
that was
guess,
it.
Right.
Just the doctor.
Wow.
Bob Picardo was the very first person.
Wow.
And let's just take a little skip-de-doo here. It wasn't until Chakotay's office we were in on day three, which that was an interesting set, you know, Chakotay sitting at his desk. We didn't often go in there.
No, very rarely. And I made light of that. I made a note of that in the prior episode. I don't know which episode we just recorded, but that was the first time I recall seeing his set, was a couple episodes ago. So his office, that is. Sorry.
We did on day three, the end of day three, we filmed the Rocky Shore precipice where Janeway talks to with the guide. The guide is sort of, you know, interpreting for the spirits.
Yeah.
So we filmed kind of the end of the show before she had gone through any of her, you know, any of her her vision quest. We filmed that scene on the precipice.
See, that's what makes it so difficult.
Yeah.
In terms of television slash film acting.
Yeah.
Because you've got to keep that. she's filming the stuff. It's like, wait a minute. You typically have to go through the journey and then you film, you know, the ending scene or the climax. And it's like opposite. And it's difficult because you got to track that within your own head as an artist, as an actor. You have to realize, okay, where are we in this script, in this episode? Oh, we're at the end. Okay. Well, I've already had enlightenment. Did I have enlightenment? I don't know. You know, there's all these questions. So that's difficult. Awesome.
Yeah. I also, in my notes here, I noticed my little checklist I have throughout the script for different scenes. In this very first scene, I made a note, the Land of Oz is what I wrote down, that I was thinking about these caves and Kes and Neelix wandering off, you know, when they go over in Wizard of Oz, they go over and they pull the curtain back and they see the wizard back there.
Yeah, yeah.
A bit of that. That was a note to myself.
So you would make shorthand notes like that on your script to just sort of give you references to what you were thinking of, your idea for that scene, right?
Yeah.
What's the action of that scene? Perfect. I want to go to after she gets shocked, basically Torres and Kim run in to find Kes on the ground and Neelix is already freaking out. I ran in really weird. Did you notice that? I was very disappointed. And I kept thinking there's only one reason for that. That ground was unstable. That had to be one reason, why I was
probably
sort of like,
you know, dirt or, you know, mulch or something down
loose there. Dirt over solid plywood is kind of slippery. You know what I'm saying? It's not it's not going to be the easiest stuff to run in and stop on. And plus the shoes that we're wearing, Robbie, they're like dress shoes. Like we didn't have like, you know, a grip on the bottom, like an athletic shoe sole. It was the sole of a dress shoe practically. So I think that that was what was going
that
on.
That might've been it. A little slippery. Yeah.
So now we're in the sick bay. We're in sick bay and Janeway and the doctor is there and Neelix as well. Kes is in a comatose-like state and Neelix, very concerned, he asks to help. Janeway asks Neelix to find out scientific data on the energy field and sends him back down to the planet.
Here is my little drawing for the blocking of this scene. And just where the actors might go. And here's some notes for those that are just listening to audio. Yeah, it's fascinating to look back at some of my directing planning.
Do you still do that now? Do you draw that out like that?
I do like that? Sometimes and not always. You know, I got to be honest. Like now that I know, I'm good with a lot of these kind of fundamental things. But I loved, this is something that I found. So I made this worksheet for myself that I created when I first started directing, and I still have something like this, but it's evolved over time. And this is the first one I ever made. I hadn't seen it until I just opened this binder up. So,
and for those of you who are listening,
it says, I'm going to read, it says director's checklist. Then it says central theme. So for this scene, I put the theme of the scene is it must be science and facts behind a belief. So that's the argument we're making in this scene. It's got to be science and there's got to be facts. It can't just be some religious thing. A question I put down was, look everywhere until you find an answer. I call this the ER scene or the triage scene. A lot of these things are obvious, but sometimes, you know, Kes has just arrived. This is a fact. She just arrived. So we need to remind the actors that you've just gotten here. You're just beginning to assess this.
Yeah.
As opposed to, we've been here for an hour and, you know, character objectives I have for the doctor to assess the medical condition. Janeway's objective is let's not waste any time, I put down. Mm-hmm. Neelix's objective is to be of some help, to be of some use. I put down one of the categories here is the point of view or the empathy position. I always feel like every scene has a character that is sort of experiencing that scene. And the audience is experiencing it through that character's point of view. So for this scene, I felt like Janeway was the point of view.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one who's going to go on this vision quest. So she's sort of experiencing what the doctor's saying. You know, I have a physical and internal chronology. Where are we coming from? I wrote down categories like conflict, cinema language, meaning what kind of visual style. Am I handheld? Am I not handheld, but I want it to feel sort of energetic that way? Is there any other picturization I put as a category? Composition support.
You did this for every scene? You did this for every scene. You made out this little list here. Is that right?
I would print out this thing and then I would fill it in. I just randomly open another page. Here's scene 17 and 18. Yeah. Central theme, find the facts firsthand.
Okay, so you did it for every scene. Yeah. Very detailed.
It's not every scene. I will say I remember when Roxanne Dawson directed and I looked at her notebook. I felt like, wow, she was much more prepared than me. Like I thought I was prepared. She's got post-it notes and so much writing and so many words. Sometimes I would just write like, you know, simple things or simple graphics.
I'm sorry. My first thought process, Robbie, about Roxanne's notebook this is my comedic view of that, is that she had stuff written down like, ask Kate what she had for breakfast. Depending on what type of food it was, it may make her look like she's retaining water. If that's the case, light Kate differently. You know, like this is the kind of attention to detail that Roxanne had.
But he would have a lot of attention to detail. This is like how I would storyboard. I would often draw my own little storyboards, which are so fundamental and basic. But, you know, stuff like that.
And these are just basic drawings by hand that Robbie's made on paper, like a stick figure almost.
Like a stick figure,
is this a medium shot? Is this a master? I mean, he's showing exactly the flow, the storyboard of what's happening in the story.
Yeah, and there's storyboard artists that are much more detailed and better. You know, they
draw things. Of course.
For me, it was more a process of, oh, well, if I go from a close-up to this shot, or if they're moving this way, could that blocking, that staging, bring me into a close-up?
Bring you to the
Could I pan into this shot and things like that? So I noticed in my notes that I would make notes about shots, like tilt from the doctor down to the biobed and focus on the blinky. And I had forgotten. I used to call those things blinkies.
Blinkies.
Like if there was like just medical or like, you know, science-y stuff that was just like a prop that always had lights on them, I just go to the blinkies. Like, and I have that note in my script all over the place. Like, you know, tight shot of the blinkies, pan off the blinkies over to here.
So, isn't a blinky like a pacifier? Or isn't that?
I don't know. I called it anything that had little lights on it that was just like a prop. Yeah.
That's cute. Okay. Yeah. So now we are, let's see, Janeway gives Neelix his homework assignment to go down on the planet to find out exactly what's going on. And she's stressing, or she's really emphasizing she needs scientific data. So here we are. We're having the first glimpses of the theme of science versus religion. Captain Janeway then pleads with the Nakani magistrate. They're currently in her ready room, where she pleads with the magistrate to meet with the monks of the Nakisti Council. The Nakisti are the ones that have devoted their lives to the religious aspect of this culture, of this society.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And so right off the bat, we see that there's the separation not only between science and religion, but there's a separation between state and religion. The Nakani magistrates like, hey, wait a minute. I'm just a politician. I don't know anything when it comes to, that's the monk's business, right? So, and Janeway is still pushing him for more scientific data. Give me as much science as possible, please. And he can't. So then we go to the sick bay where we find out that the biogenic field can be entered or can be passed through by the monks without any harm. So then that gives Janeway some hope. She's thinking, okay, there is something that can happen here. Mm-hmm. There has to be. And she has more hope when Neelix comes back with the story about King Nevid. King Nevid is someone from Nakani history, ancient history, whose son, the prince, had the same thing happen to him that happened to Kes. And he went into that comatose-like state, and the king basically requested to seek an audience with the spirits. And he went through a ritual to seek an audience with the spirits. And essentially, he requested that his son be brought back to consciousness. And because he went through that whole ritual, and because he was the king, and he acknowledged the fact that as a king and a father, he had responsibility for this prince, they did give him his son back, or the consciousness of his son back. Then we flash over to Chakotay's office. We have Janeway and Chakotay. Chakotay suggests that the doctor should probably monitor the captain's physical condition and also have some way to call out for an emergency beam out. These are the precautions that Chakotay is taking or trying to take with Janeway to make sure that she's safe as possible, because she's decided that she is going to embark upon this same type of ritual, if at all possible. And that is when the Nakani magistrate calls and says that Janeway's request to go through this ritual has been granted. There is interest from the council, the religious council, that she even wants to do this. And it's so funny because Janeway, she's like, well, you know, there's a scientific basis for most religious doctrine, right? This is something that she says to Chakotay. And she, this entire time, Robbie, she's you directed her so that she's very smug about this whole, about this ritual. She was like, well, you know, I've already studied all these tribes. It's going to be some type of like thing where it's going to be physical and there's going to be endurance involved. And the way she talks about it, it's like, it's going to be a walk in the park is the way she's talking. It's like, yeah, no problem. I'm going to be able to take it, take this on, and it's going to be easy.
I do remember in that scene that I think this was the audition scene that the guide had, that Becky Baker had. Mm-hmm. Now that I think about it, when we got to filming it, it was in a very tight space and there wasn't much room to move the camera. And I remember feeling like, oh no, my plan is going to be very hard. Now that I'm physically here, you know, this is a tight, it's a little corner where we're putting this, where she's working on this light, and it's hard, tricky to get the cameras in there. That's one thing I remember, but I thought it was great working with Becky and Kate, just such great actors. I do remember that they wanted to, you know, kind of encourage her to be kind of fun and funny and not at all a spiritual kind of guide. Like, they didn't want her to seem like a guide at all. They didn't want her to seem like she was trying to be deep or profound, or so. I remember that was a lot of fun to direct and sort of push Becky and remind her of like, how can we do things that just aren't going to feel like, you know, some deep spiritual guide, but
that's more like, interesting.
More sitcom-y, you know.
Now, whose note was that though? Whose note was that?
I don't remember. I just remember it coming up in the prep. Like, let's make sure that this character is not at all, you know, deep or profound.
Well, it's great because it was so different from everything that we're used to seeing or hearing on Voyager. And I made that note. I said, wow, her delivery is more contemporary and less stylized than any other guest star or any series regular on this show, the way she was talking. And I was thinking, when I first saw her, Becky Baker, speak, I thought, okay, this reminds me of, and I don't know if you've watched, I think you said you haven't watched Discovery, correct? You haven't watched
Discovery. I've seen some of it, yeah.
Okay. So what Becky Baker reminded me of, a combination between comedian Tig Notaro's character, the chief engineer Jet Reno, and Mary Wiseman's character, Tilly, mixed with Liz, your actor friend that was your witness at your wedding. Those three, what was Liz's character on?
Liv.
Yeah, what's Liz's character? Liv's character on Liv's character's name?
Elizabeth is her real name. Liv.
Oh, I'm sorry. Liv
her
is her character.
Is yes. L-I-V.
Okay, okay. So
Deputy Liv.
Right. So if you mix the characters of Jet Reno, Jet Reno, Sylvia Tilly, and Liv from Resident Alien.
Deputy Liv,
Deputy Liv, you get Becky Baker's character on
the guide.
The guide, exactly. That's what I felt. And I just thought, my gosh, she's really speaking so modern and not what I'm used to. So
it's
this is from a note you guys had.
Yeah, it was the note. It's what we wanted to do with the character, was to make it not spiritual or religious at all. And I remember it was fun to remind her of that and feel the freedom to sort of push her into a much more, you know, down to earth, contemporary, almost sitcom-y kind of wisecracking.
Very sitcom,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was fun.
Becky Baker takes her to the next room where all these attendants show up and start taking Janeway's clothing off. Well, at least Janeway's in the beginning was like, what? You know, wait. And then Becky Baker says, you need to just trust this. This is a ritual. Go with it. And she then allows all the attendants to disrobe her. And I do not remember the scene at all of Janeway practically naked. I'm like, what?
I actually pitched this scene. This was the one thing. I think in the original script, she met the guide. And then you cut to her
wearing the robe,
just already wearing the robe. And I was like, a minute, there's an opportunity if we're going to play this theme of like shedding technology and science, and she's letting go of all of these things, and we're going to go on this vision quest. You have an opportunity to have her very vulnerable and to see her, like Picard had an episode, I think, where he was naked or something, a prisoner or something. And I don't even remember that episode of TNG, but I do remember the image of Picard being very vulnerable and naked and not in his spacesuit and his captain's uniform. And I just said, let's make sure we have a moment like that to start this vision quest with Janeway, where we could go through like a cleansing, you know, a bathing kind of thing. And she's has to shed her uniform. And I talked to Kate about it first, because they said, well, that's a great idea, but I don't know if Kate will do it. You know, if you can talk her into it, sure, we'll put it in the script. So I went to Kate and I was like, I think this would be a great moment.
And she agreed. And again, this is your wonderful relationship with her being your trailer neighbor, your next door neighbor. And you had that ability to ask her that. But I have a question for you. Did you find it a little bit, it was interesting that she's playing so coy and she's covering up, because I would think as a captain, she'd be very secure in her body. You know what I'm saying? And that she, and especially in front of, these aren't even male attendants, you know, these are female attendants. I was thinking that maybe as it was a little uncharacteristic of the captain to be a little like covering up. And I understand covering up for television, like we can't show nudity, we can't show topless, we can't show breasts. I get that. But obviously she could have had her hands down and it could have been shot from the back where you didn't see the breast as well. Was there any discussion between you and Kate on that where she felt like, hey?
Yeah, there was. I mean, I think in my mind I had an image when I was pitching it to her of more of what you're describing, of this sort of, okay, I'm going to be vulnerable and I'm going to be. And I think when Kate got there, you know, she said, look, I feel like I would be very uncomfortable. And the captain would feel like, what are you doing? You're taking, you know, reluctant. That she would be reluctant to do this sort of primitive kind of behavior and take her clothes off in front of strangers. So I think that's kind of where we landed, was sort of that in-between sort of discomfort, I guess. Yeah.
Then she's led to the train car room. And
the waiting room.
The waiting room.
Yes.
Janeway is just so impatient. And the theme in this scene is literally, you've got three elderly, wise people saying, wait. And Janeway's like, must go was her objective. Must leave this room.
That's right.
And not realizing that this is the room, that this is the ritual. You need to stay in this room. But she doesn't. She knocks on the door. The guide opens it. We see Becky again. And Janeway makes reference to, I'm not sure if I've done what I need to do in this room, but I'm ready to move on. And she's like, okay, well then you can move on. So she then begins to hold the stone. She's holding the stone and holding the stone. We flash back to the sick bay. The doctor detects the strain of Janeway holding the stone for so long. Then we flash back to the sanctuary. She's drawing on a wall and she's climbing up a face of a cliff. Now, is this all in her mind, Robbie? Or is this actually things that she's doing?
No, because she's there for 3 days, right? They say, okay, so she is they say that stuff. She's been there for 3 days doing these different things, but she's also kind of, it's unclear what how much of this is I think reality and sort of hallucination start to become one in this room, this room of rituals. I do remember that I wanted to make use of the Steadicam in this chamber, that I wanted the camera to be moving a lot, that I wanted them to be walking around, that I wanted her to start to go on a bit of an acid trip and sort of be like, wait, what's right, what's left, what's up, what's down,
yeah,
the snake bit and the painting and the all of it,
kind of like your version of the thaw of Marvin's episode in a way, sort of weird, surreal, like, you know, environment, right?
Yeah. And it's funny because I remember struggling in this set a bit and the scenes we pulled the Steadicam out, we did a number of shots with the Steadicam, but because of the way the set was designed and how Marvin had to light, we couldn't really do a 360 and turn all the way around. And that was a great lesson in sort of maybe involving the DP into the planning ahead of time. Because once we got there and I was like, okay, Marv, here's what I'm thinking in the Steadicam, even though I had the tools, I didn't have all the information. So it was sort of a compromised version of what I initially really wanted to do in that room. But I was happy with how it turned out, but it definitely didn't have the kind of sweep and the constant circling that I was looking for. We couldn't do that type of those type of moves in there because of where the lights had to sit, because of the way the set and the ceiling and all was designed. So
okay. But if you had talked to Marvin earlier, you think maybe a solution could have come
up? We might have been able to come up with a solution of hanging some lights ahead of time, rigging those lights earlier, things like that. Right. Which I just didn't have enough experience to know, you know, but I was happy with how it turned out. It's still, we still got a lot of movement in that room and still got a lot of different looks.
When Janeway's climbing up the cliff, that's just stage 16.
Yeah.
With the, some green screen action going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. From there, we move to sick bay. The doctor actually displays empathy for Neelix. He feels bad. He touches his shoulder. Did you direct Bob to touch John Ethan's shoulder?
I don't know if I did or if that was Bob. I don't remember.
Okay. The script clearly probably did say that he's showing some type of empathy, obviously, right, for Neelix.
Yeah.
And that may have been Bob's decision to touch him. Maybe yours. We don't know. Now we go back to the sanctuary, the inner sanctum. We learn of this creature. Oh, God, I wish we could have seen what this thing looked like. The Neset.
Neset.
Okay.
I think so.
The Neset can travel from this world to the spirit realm. The spirit realm, the Neset serve as the gatekeepers to the spirit realm. And now the guide encourages Janeway to stick her hand in the container that is containing the very vicious sounding Neset. Janeway sticks her arm in and she gets
Sorry, I get stuck on your question. The doctor stands by the bedside a moment, looking down at his patient. Then he reaches out and touches Neelix on the shoulder.
On the shoulder. Okay. It was written in. All right.
Yeah.
So Lisa directed that one.
Lisa did.
Lisa put it in there.
Yeah.
Lisa Klenk. Okay. Which is rare though, because let's face it, the doctor has always been quite ornery and doesn't really care that much about anybody.
Yeah.
Right. And so now we see another side of the doctor. Mm-hmm. So now, she gets bitten by the Neset and this is, it was so difficult to watch Janeway struggle from that bite, because up until this point, you really haven't seen that type of, you haven't seen Janeway go through that kind of a painful, you know, experience, except maybe when the caretaker has the needle in her cavity chest from, you know, the first episode. But other than that, to see Janeway just talking about her chest constricting, being tight, and then just literally just passing out,
was tough to watch. We're not used to seeing the captain put in these dire circumstances.
Yeah. Right.
But I guess, you know, it must be dire because it's the ritual that she must go through. So now we jump back to sick bay and we have Chakotay debating with the doctor. Tuvok is the one who finally convinces Chakotay to let Janeway complete the ritual. But up until that point, the doctor and Chakotay are just kind of going back and forth. Chakotay is very concerned about the welfare of Janeway. But Tuvok says, look, I know Janeway well. She would want to complete the ritual. So let her stay in this state that she's in.
Did you notice, by the way, that Chakotay is like, I am not leaving this monitor until she returns. He's like, dude, let it go. Like, you're not.
I am not leaving this monitor.
I am not.
I will not eat. I will fast to protest the Janeway predicament. So now Janeway's at the ocean. And is that just a stock shot of the ocean? Like, what?
Yeah,
ocean
I think it
that?
Was. I don't think we had anything to look at. It was a green screen. I think we shot. Okay. Over her shoulder to a green screen or something.
Okay, got you.
Yeah.
She makes her request to save Kes, and this is when she is told by the guide that she already has everything that she needs to save Kes within her. We go back to the sanctuary, inner sanctum, and the guide gives Janeway's clothing back. She goes back to the ship. The doctor formulates a treatment for Kes based on the toxin that he's Janeway very confident. Was exposed to.
Yes, the doctor's very confident in his science.
Oh my god!
Come
gosh,
up with a hypothesis and run some tests, and
then it doesn't work.
No,
then it doesn't work.
Almost kills her.
And he's not. Yes, it almost kills her. It's quite scary. We end up back in the sanctuary entrance where Janeway is now talking to the guide. And
well, he says at the end of the scene, the doctor says, you know, Captain, I'm sorry, but, you know, everything my tests are wrong and everything you went through is meaningless. And she goes, wait.
Oh, that was the key. Yes.
Somebody else says that. I'll be right back. Yeah. Because that's what the guide had said.
Exactly. But
that's what the guide had said. It's all meaningless. And
that could have been the title of this episode too. Meaningless could have been the title.
It's in my haiku.
It's in my limerick. We've got meaningless twice there. It's a very important word. So she goes back to the guide, who then informs her everything that you went through was meaningless, just like you just told me. So there is that interaction. Now we go back to the train car scene and the train car set, and there's a discussion of science and faith. And I just love the lines from not the ornery old man, but the nicer one, the good cop. He says, most of the challenges in life are the ones we create for ourselves.
Mm.
Very wise. Then he also says, if you can explain everything, what's left to believe in?
Yeah. I remember that line.
And then another wonderful line. If you believe you're ready, then you are. There's no more to it than that. I mean, super wise words. Loved all those lines. And then ornery elderly sage. That's almost like a tongue twister.
That's ornery good. You're making it
elderly
harder
sage. I am. The ornery sage says, but if you go in with any doubt, with any hesitation, then you're both dead. Dun, dun, dun. And I love the whole, you know, when Janeway's like saying, so what do I do? What do I do? Well, you're not going to want to hear it. You got to kill her. You've got, you know, she has to basically
kill her
through
again.
That thing. Yeah, you got to kill her again. You got to take her through the field one more time. Janeway then calls Chakotay to bring Kes down to the sanctuary. And they beam down Neelix, Chakotay, Kes, plus a bed, which looks nothing like the bio bed that she was laying on.
No, I don't know where that bed came
from. What the heck? Where's that bed come from, Robbie?
I don't know. Explain I've never seen that. It before or after.
And have we ever beamed furniture down? I don't think we've ever, it's always people, right? I mean, this is the first time on Voyager that a piece of furniture was beamed down.
Yeah.
and a bed that no one's ever seen before in their life. And then of course, this is when Chakotay really tries to convince Janeway that she needs to rethink of her plan to walk into the biogenic field with Kes. And even Neelix is sitting there pleading, saying, look, I understand what Kes is going through, but I don't want you to die also. right? And of course she walks through and everything's okay. And I do find, Robbie,
yeah,
everything in this episode, the only thing that kind of made me go, was the reaction to Cass being revived.
I was just looking, I was trying to look in my script because it says the golden burst of light flashes from the walls. Janeway feels it. We hold tight on her. She looks down at Cass and herself, and she sees Cass's eyes open off Janeway. It doesn't say in the script that Neelix reacts or Chakotay. So I think what happened was I probably shot it thinking, okay, Neelix and Chakotay just need to look. And then we go to Janeway, tight close up, seeing Cass, and that's it. Now I'm a little wiser to know, hey, we should get the reactions, make sure that, you know, even though in the script it doesn't say Neelix is relieved or Neelix, you know, there's no reference to him reacting, because it's really the way the script reads is we don't even go back to Neelix. And so that's probably why I shot it that way, but they decided to use their close-ups, and then they don't, we didn't have a reaction, but they used it anyway.
Okay. Well, that
and
makes
she
sense.
Was very far away from them. Like, Janeway was, you know, 30, 40 feet up on the stairs.
Right.
Looking down at Cass. They couldn't have seen Cass's eyes open there. They wouldn't have been able to see it.
Yeah. So in reality, in reality, it should have been the reaction, literally just Janeway, really. Just Janeway's reaction.
Which is how it's scripted.
They shouldn't have cut. They shouldn't have cut to Johnny.
Editorially, I think that was a choice they made to use those reactions that they're really.
And it was a wrong choice. I'm going to say right now, it was the wrong choice, because it makes like it looks like Neelix is very uncaring of his love, you know, to me. So, all right. Well, good to know that that's cleared up. Thank you for explaining that, because I thought, why would Robbie not know that? I mean, he would know this, but
unless Cass stood up and looked back at them. And then
she doesn't.
She's still.
Chakotay or Neelix wouldn't have been able to see her eyes open.
No,
you see what I'm saying, right? Yeah. Because she doesn't make a move. If you look at that cut, it's just Kes lying there, opening her eyes up, and she doesn't go like. She doesn't move at all. She just opens her eyes and looks at Janeway. Period. Yeah. End of her coverage. So
At the very end, so the last scene is the doctor seems to have a scientific explanation for what happened, and it's not magic, it's not spiritual anything, he's got another explanation, even though he had an explanation before and it didn't work.
Right,
this time he's got an explanation he thinks is right.
Correct.
And she says, that's a perfectly sound explanation, doctor, very scientific. And it says in the script here, it says she holds a look with him for a moment. Is that the only explanation? So she's waiting for maybe more, or maybe thinking that there's more to this, but she doesn't say it. And then it says, she moves out of the office, leaving the doctor and Cass a bit nonplussed. On Janeway, as she heads out of sickbay, unsettled, still not quite sure how to make sense of this experience, fade out the end. So I think we got that. I think we got that moment as scripted, you know.
You did get the moment. Yeah. You definitely got the moment. She's very pensive. She's a million miles away. And she's literally questioning like everything that she knows. You know what I'm saying? I mean, she's always been about science.
Yeah.
And at the end, she's just sitting there going, it's not always about science. It's not always about science.
Yeah.
It's also about things that I can't explain to you in a concrete fashion.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed a couple times in my notes, I made reference to the X-Files, which was still very popular back in the 90s. It was kind of winding down a bit, but that show had been a game changer in the sci-fi world and, you know, kind of television landscape. And the thing about X-Files that was so interesting is they would never end the episode with a clear answer whether that paranormal situation had a scientific explanation or a paranormal explanation. On the X-Files, it kind of ended with, they both could be true, this scientific explanation or this crazy paranormal explanation.
Yeah.
True too. And I wrote down X-Files in my script a number of times going, I want to make sure that we end this episode with the same kind of possibilities that X-Files sort of ends with. It felt very X-Filesy to me, this episode.
You X-Filed it. You definitely X-Filed it, the ending. For
nice,
sure.
Baby.
Yes. All right. Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So what's your theme, buddy? We didn't talk about our life lesson.
What is my theme? We put our faith in the things that we choose to put our faith in. Meaning, okay. I can put my faith in science if I choose that, or I can put my faith in other things. That like in this story, Janeway's experience just fulfilled her expectations. And in the end, it didn't mean anything. All the snake bite and the cliff and the rock and all those things were just like cliches of what a spiritual vision quest should be. And that was really, Janeway created it.
The lessons for me come from the old sages, really, in this episode. And that, and those lines that I read out earlier. I mean, most of the challenges in life are the ones we create for ourselves. Most of the challenges in life are the ones we create for ourselves. I mean, that's a big mm-hmm. lesson right there. Mm-hmm. I think so many people, when things happen, are always saying, oh, that person did this to me. That person is the reason why this happened to me. There's a lot of blaming going on. There's not a lot of like accountability and realizing, wait a minute, things are really tough. Let's look at myself and what, why I'm in this situation. You know, it's not always someone outside of you that's causing this, or a situation outside of yourself that's causing it. It's really, it starts with you. Right.
Yeah.
And also just, you know, the whole concept of belief, just believing and having faith in something, and having faith to the point of there is no doubt. You can't, because if you have doubt or hesitation, and this can be in anything, really, whether you're playing sports or whether you're doing choosing to buy an investment property or something, these are life decisions that literally you have to have the belief and trust that you are doing something that is going to benefit you, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you have that belief, that 100% faith that you are making the right move and no hesitation, that's usually when you succeed, I find, or you make the right move.
Thank you for listening to this recap. For our patrons, stay tuned. We've got Lisa Klink, who wrote this episode, is going to join us for some of our bonus material for our patrons. It was great to revisit my directing debut, and such a great episode written by Lisa Klink, beautifully acted by Kate Mulgrew, and our guest stars were phenomenal. It was really fun. It was really fun to revisit this one. So thanks.
Stay tuned, everybody. Next week, Robbie and I will be reviewing Future's End, Part 1. Dun, dun, dun.
See you next week, guys.
Thanks.